approximation.
Yeah, thank you. So as you have seen from the title and also from the slide giving here the collaborations, this will be a complimentary talk to the previous one. So I start with acknowledging the very nice and fruitful collaboration with Ingrid's group. And I want to make it complementary in the sense that we are using another approach that allows us to deal with disordered alloys, concentrated alloys. And as time allows, I would like to address a number of transport phenomena that are connected with spin-orbit coupling. But before I come to results, I want to give some introduction. But concerning this, I can make it very brief because Ingrid was already giving you, as far as necessary, an introduction to the topic of the talks in the afternoon. So we are dealing with longitudinal and transverse charge, heat, and spin transport in the linear response regime, and we will apply linear response formalism. We would like to see the response concerning charge, heat, and spin to electric fields in the first part and in the second part with respect to gradients in the temperature in a sample. And with the sample, we have in mind, in particular, not only pure systems, but also disordered systems. Now, the first part will deal with electric transport. And that means we have to describe our sample by conductivity tensor in the most general way. And this would give us, in particular, then access to the anomalous Hall effect that was already introduced. And I don't have to say too much. Important for us in practice is, of course, the shape of that tensor. And the shape of the tensor is, of course, determined by the symmetry of the material, if it's a crystalline material, of course. And the most simple case, it's just cubic. It's non-magnetic. And if you go through with all symmetry operations that give restrictions to the shapes, then you will find out that it's just degenerate and isotropic, the material at the end. Now, if you have magnetization, let's say along the Z direction, you have less restrictions coming from symmetry, and you end up with this shape of the tensor. And here you can read off already all galvanomagnetic effects, the anomalous Hall effect due to the difference in here, and appearance of off-diagonal elements that give rise to the Hall effect. And now, if one goes through these arguments with symmetry, one finds out that they, so to say, hold in that sense only if we account for spin-orbit coupling. And that means these galvanomagnetic effects that have to be connected somehow with spin-orbit interaction. Now, this is dealt by our calculation just the same way as in Ingrid's calculation by making use of the Dirac equation set up in the framework of spin density function theory. And I'm happy to mention that one of the pioneers in that field is here, Alan MacDonald, who introduced the formal basis for this type of calculation. Very similar to Ingrid's approach, we are using the Green's function to represent the electronic structure. But we use it throughout, not only for dealing with a scattering event, but in particular, this will give a great opportunity to deal with disordered alloys. And concerning this, we use a CPA, the coherent potential approximation, going back to the work of Sowen and others later on. And the idea is we want to deal with a configurational average of a disordered alloy. And for this, we introduce a hypothetical medium, a coherent medium. And this is constructed such a way that saying embedding an A or an B atom when dealing with an AB alloy and waiting with a corresponding concentration should not give rise to additional scattering. So this is a definition in terms of KKR or scattering formalism. And this allows to define and introduce that auxiliary material. Now, this is a single site theory, and you can ask whether this is good enough. But you will see later on, I hope, this is convincing that this is good enough to deal with configurational averages that we need for dealing with disordered alloys. But if necessary, we can go beyond that single site approximation by doing a corresponding cluster averaging. Now, to give you an idea what CPA means in practice, if you start with a band structure of pure copper and now you move on to copper palladium alloy, so this is copper rich, you still have, when you look at the Bloch spectral function, some behavior of that quantity that very much looks like the density as a dispersion relation of pure copper, but you also notice that it's smeared out, and this is of course an impact of disorder. And this is also visible when you look for the Fermi surface. Here's the Fermi surface cut. And now from these figures, you could in principle derive all what is needed to do Boltzmann-based calculations, not only for the disorder, but also for the concentrated alloy regimes. And so you could take the group velocity or the lifetime from the width here. And in fact, this has been done in the past. But here we want to do it, so to say, more accurately. And this can be done on the basis of the Kubo formalism. And this is written up here already in a simplified way, single particle approximation, in particular with a restriction to t equals 0. So for the moment, this is all for t equals 0, so residual resistivity. And it has been worked out by Smirschka and Streeter in a way that we can deal in particular with off-diagonal elements. Otherwise, a standard Kubo-Greenwood would give only the symmetric part. Now, this gives a basis for our calculations, and this has to be implemented within the KKR CPA formalism. And the expression look a bit over. I want to point out only one feature of these type of calculations. We have here something in that we call vertex correction. In fact, this was already on the slide of Ingrid, namely the vertex correction take care set. Now, applying the formalism, we have products of Green's function and have to take the configurational average. And this should not be just replaced by the product of configurational averaged Green's function. So the difference between the two is taken care of by the vertex correction. In fact, these play a very important role because they give rise to the scattering in processes or represent them within the Kubo formalism. In fact, this was already pointed out by Butler in the 80s. If you use a KKR CPA Kubo formalism, you can identify very clearly these vertex corrections, and you can identify them one-to-one to the so-called scattering in terms within the Boltzmann formalism. And as you guess, this will be very important for the analysis of our data later on. Now, coming to results, just to give you an idea what you can get by this approach, you see the isotropic residual resistivity for the alloy system cobalt platinum as a function of the composition. It's not completely parabolic, but the behavior is quite simple. And this, as I said, is a residual resistivity as a function of composition compared with experiment that is obviously quite well reproduced. On the right-hand side, you see iron nickel, the anisotropic magnetoresistance ratio here. And these are experimental data as a function of the concentration. And again, a reasonable agreement is obtained. And this is also obtained by other people. More interesting is, of course, here the transverse transport expressed in terms of the anomalous Hall conductivity. Here for the FCC iron palladium system. So this is palladium rich. Iron would be BCC, of course, and FCC nickel palladium. You see in red experimental data here as a function of the composition with a change in sign. And the full blue squares give our theoretical results that obviously are in quite good agreement. You see here it's given in absolute numbers. What you also see are open symbols, and these are calculations that ignore these vertex corrections. Now I have to come to that point in a bit more detail. You also see here that these curves without the vertex corrections go reasonably well over to the value given here for pure nickel. And this makes a contact to the pure element situation. Namely here, what you see is listed the results based on the Kubo formalism that we got for iron, nickel, and cobalt using the Kubo-Schroeder formalism. And this is compared with results based on the Berry curvature formalism coming from different authors. And altogether, there are, of course, differences numerically. So results are obtained on these different band structure methods and so on. But altogether, one can see that the results are quite consistent. Expressing here the correspondence between the Kubo formalism and the Berry Berry curvature formalism for the pure element situation. And this was also shown, of course, formally by various authors that this is the case. Now, to get insight in the other contributions, and in particular to get a distinction between intrinsic, very curvature-like contributions, we look at the diagrammatic expansion of the off-diagonal elements that you show here that was given, for example, by Crepieux and Bruno and other people. So the first row just gives you the Green's function and the vertices, and propagators as listed here, and corrections due to scattering. And all this row we summarize to be intrinsic. So this would be, so to say, the situation for a pure element. And now if you consider dilute alloys, you have these corrections. These corrections have no vertex contributions that you see here. And all these can be summarized to be intrinsic. And in addition, they can be separated into side jump and skew scattering contributions. Now, all these contributions have different behavior concerning the concentration. And this allows now to make use of the scaling behavior of the various terms, in particular of the skew scattering terms that should go linearly with longitudinal conductivity. And the other contributions are typically assumed to be concentration independent or only weakly independent. So we may assume for analysis of our ab initio results that these two, side jump and intrinsic, are more or less constant. And now that means we can, from the full results, we can extract the extrinsic contributions made up of the skew and side jump, and this should scale according to that expression. Now the extrinsic is now plotted here as a function of the longitudinal resistivity, of course, with the concentration here as an implicit parameter for three different systems. And now you see in this dilute regime, we really find that linear behavior. And that means this contribution should all be ascribed to the skew scattering. And here at sigma being zero, we find only a very small remaining contribution that should be called according to that decomposition that is in that way the definition of a side jump contribution, that this is really very small. Now, I already stressed the connection to the Boltzmann formalism. The Boltzmann formalism, as you have seen before, is applicable to diluted alloys. It gives you the longitudinal contribution. And this, of course, can be then compared directly to results coming from the Kubo-Streder approach. It also gives you the skew scattering, why is the scattering in terms. On the Kubo side, you first get all and everything in one number. You make a decomposition according to the vertex corrections into intrinsic and extrinsic. And this, once more, can be decomposed according to the scaling laws in the side jump, that is normally small, and the skew scattering, that because of the connection between vertex corrections and scattering can be now compared one to one each other. And this allows to make the direct contact between the two approaches you have seen before on Ingrid's slides already. These are some other systems, iron, copper, palladium, iron, palladium, cobalt, in all cases 1%, and blue are Boltzmann results and red are the Kubo results. And you see for the longitudinal resistivity a very satisfying agreement, and also for the off-diagonal elements, the Hall conductivity agreement is pretty good. I should mention here there is deviation, but these are really preliminary results I got only this morning. But anyhow, I hope this is convincing. Now, coming to the next issue, namely the spin conductivities, and that means we have, as a counterpart to the anomalous Hall effect, we have the spin Hall effect, again, of course, induced by spin orbit coupling, and it can also be observed for paramagnetic systems. Now, the basis for the calculations we are using is a Kubo-Streder-like equation that is given here. The only difference is now, so to say, the observable is now the spin current density. So what we look at is the spin current electric current correlation function. And now the operator for the spin current density is set up or constructed in a framework that is consistent with our Dirac formalism. And that means it's here derived from a corresponding four-component vector in relativistic formulations that is then fits to the Dirac formalism. Before I show results, I would like to stress that we worked out here a little bit the corresponding symmetry considerations. As you have seen in one of the previous slides for the electrical conductivity, you can also do the same as was worked out by Kleiner by extending his approach. And you have to make, you have to distinguish between the behavior of such a type of elements under unitary and anti-unitary symmetry operations. And now applying such schemes, extended scheme to paramagnetic systems, then you get these three sub-tensors. And you see you get the conductivity tensor without making reference to spin-projected conductivities. So these are already the proper conductivity tensors or subtensors connected with spin conductivity. And you get the same for ferromagnetic systems here again for a cubic one with magnetization along the set. And you see because of the reduced number of symmetry operations that give rise to restrictions, you have more elements. And of course, here you also see some diagonal elements. And this implies in particular, you could in principle have spin transport in line with the magnetization or also perpendicular, but here restricted, so to say, with a polarization along the global magnetization direction. Now coming to some results for disordered alloys, non-magnetic, you see here platinum gold, gold silver for the all of the concentration regime. I give here results for the pure end for platinum and gold and compared with some results from the literature, and we find reasonably good agreement with that. And now also here you find a very strong difference between the results without vertex corrections and with vertex corrections. And by definition, the difference between the two are the extrinsic contributions. And again, we make the same type of analysis than you have seen before. Gold platinum over all the concentration regime starting from pure gold ending at pure platinum. You see over 10%, you have a perfect linear behavior. And this is ascribed to the skew scattering contribution, again, with a conclusion that at least for this system, the side jump is quite small. The decomposition scheme is then obviously absolutely the same as for the Hall conductivity. And now again, we can compare these results coming from the colleagues from Halle for here now for copper as a host system with various elements of the 5D row with 1%. And now you see the results for the longitudinal resistivity conductivity are more or less on top of each other. And also for the skew scattering contribution to the of the Hall conductivity, you see the results as far we have it available from the colleagues are on top of our results. And this once more shows that also for the spin conductivity, the two approaches are perfectly in line with each other and consistent. Now, to get a little more inside, what is the reason for the behavior you have seen before as a function of the atomic number of the impurities? We did a similar analysis as you have seen in Ingrid's talk. So these are once more the spin conductivities of the various 5D elements in copper. You see here the proper result, so to say, without any manipulation. And now the crosses here, the plus signs, give the results when we switch off spin orbit coupling for the copper host. And you see more or less nothing changes. That means the copper host is not very important concerning spin orbit coupling for the results. But if we switch off for the P channel of the 5D elements, then the signal, so to say, breaks down, and that means the P channel is really some central quantity we have to look at. This can be analyzed in more detail. One can look here, of course, as for the spin orbit coupling parameter that we can calculate. It's not, so to say, used for the calculations of the conductivities. This is a separate calculation. And you see the P spin orbit coupling is quite strongly, and it goes up here. And the D channel has a maximum, and the absolute values are smaller. To understand this behavior, you have, in addition, to look at the P and D density of states of the impurities. And then with these two ingredients together, you can give at least a qualitative explanation of this behavior. Now, we have seen so far response to an electric field. Now we can consider it the same way as a response to thermal gradient. And this means we now come back to the first slide, so to say. We can calculate now the different currents induced by the various fields, electric field or gradient of temperature. And these response quantities are then calculated the usual way, where we have now the conductivities I was talking about so far, but now considered to be energy dependent and have to evaluate the various energy integrals. That means to calculate here the corresponding moments. And this gives then access to the various thermo-galvanomagnetic effects. To give you an idea again of the predictive power of the approach, again, some data for the residual resistivity of silver palladium, different calculation coming from different groups, and including ours, and experimental data. And so you see the results are quite in good agreement, and also in good agreement with experiment. Here is the corresponding Seebeck effect that shows for the silver palladium a strong peak here at around 60 degree. And again, this is in good agreement with other people work or with experimental data. And what one also obviously can notice here, there is obviously no direct connection between the residual resistivity and the Seebeck coefficients, because here we are fixed to the properties of the Fermi energy, while for this we have to know more information of the change of the resistivity or conductivity around the Fermi energy. And the same applies, of course, for the transverse charge transport. Here you see cobalt palladium, the anomalous Hall effect compared with experiment. Again, this is in quite good agreement. And on the right-hand side, you see the anomalous Nernst conductivity of the system, where both quantities are obviously not related in a very simple way. You find here a pronounced maximum, and you can trace it back as a resistivity or the AMR ratio in that system to the specific properties of the electronic structure. It's just a band that is moving through the Fermi energy as a function of the composition, giving rise to that maximum here. Now, what you have seen for the Hall and Nernst effect can also be seen in the spin Hall and spin Nernst conductivity. Here is an example. I show results for gold copper. You see, again, parabolic-like, nearly parabolic-like behavior of the corresponding spin Hall conductivity. Decomposed here or separated here the intrinsic parts, that is, so to say, only a small contribution. Only in the middle of the concentration regime it contributes. And quite different in the concentration behavior. In particular, the sign, as you see it here, is a spin Nernst conductivity. And again, of course, you need more information on the energy dependence of the corresponding conductivity forces. Also here, we make a decomposition of this quantity. You see here on the copper-rich side, the total spin Nernst conductivity and its decomposition into intrinsic side jump that is quite appreciable in this case. And dominating is the skew scattering, and all together, so to say, reproduce, of course, the total result according to that expression. Now, finally, very briefly, one can, as was done by that work of Tauber and co-workers in the group of Ingrid Merti, one can consider a specific situation for when discussing the transverse spin transport, namely the so-called open circuit condition. And that means we can now here that equals the electric field that is built up in the sample with expression on the right-hand side. This is just so a reordering of the term you have seen before. And this gives rise that in this case, one has two contributions to the effective spin Nernst conductivity. One, so to say, an electric one and one thermal one, given in red and in blue. And the point I would like to stress here is that this type of analysis can be done, in contrast to previous work, without making use of spin projected properties. So this can all be formulated with a spin conductivity and so on. So here are results for that type of situation. Again, for now here for gold as a host system, sorry, copper again as a host, having 1% gold, 1% titanium, and 1% bismuth. And you see that, first of all, for titanium, we get, again, nearly perfect agreement with results from Halle. For the other two systems, there are some differences. We could not work out the reason for that so far. But what's more interesting is here, the two contributions can have the same sign or can, so to say, counteract. So with this, I would like to summarize. I have presented a relativistic implementation of the Kubo-Schrader formalism and have done this on the basis of the KKR-CPA formalism. I have shown applications of these to concentrated alloys for investigations of the anomalous Hall effect, the spin Hall effect, the anomalous Nernst and spin Nernst effect. And now this approach gives just one number, but one can decompose it on the basis of the connection to the vertex corrections and the connections of these to the intrinsic the scattering in terms. So we get a decomposition into intrinsic and extrinsic set way. And the scaling behavior of the various terms allow us to identify skew and side jump contribution as shown here once more. And finally, what was very important for our developments that by making that analysis, we could show the equivalence of the Boltzmann formalism and the Kubo formalism for the dilute limit regime. Okay, with this, I thank for your attention.
So questions? Okay, maybe I will start with first questions. Can you say a little bit about experimental progress in this field?
I was showing primarily results for disordered alloys as far as these were available. And concerning the spin Hall conductivity, Ingrid addressed already some comparison, mm-hmm. of course, and I'm not aware of results so far. Yeah,
I think there is not yet a measurement of the spin Nernst effect, but yesterday in the talk of Ushida, I thought there might be a spin Nernst contribution as well. The experiment was analyzed in terms of this anomalous Hall contribution coming from the induced magnetic moments at the interface. But if there wouldn't be induced magnetic moments, there would be spin Nernst effect with the same orientation and everything the same. Now, the anomalous Hall contribution that was discussed is, of course, a phenomenon that is related to the interface. But of course, this spin current goes higher in the sample and could cause spin nonce contributions. And I was wondering, and this was my question yesterday, they might be even, from this opposite sign, they might be even canceled. This depends on the direction of the magnetic moments at the interface. So.
Okay.
I was first.
Yeah, I think there have been earlier experiments by Secchi and collaborators, which also could not decide whether they had anomalous Hall effect in the ferromagnet or spin-Nernst effect in the normal metal. So in respect, I think calculations should be very helpful. But then my question would be that most experiments are not done on bulk nowadays, especially on the spin-Hall effect and also the anomalous Nernst effect. Would you be able to extend all these calculations to heterostructures?
So the code is already set up in such a way that we can deal with films, as we have heard before. But what we are more interested in is to deal with top layers on top of a half-infinite substrate. So this is doable, and we have already results for iron on top of gallium arsenide, or we apply it to topological insulators. But here I focused on our results on bulk material. So the formalism definitely is able to handle these situations.
Okay. So she seems Garrett to skip me. So I agree with Garrett for this is that what you need to do. But let me ask you a question on regarding to the analysis of particularly the safer one that experimentally, which would be NMOS Hall effect, right? That's definitely not questions from there what you measure. So there, when you have the very weak limit of disorder, where you have this. Large, essentially X, you know, the perfect alloys or the perfect limits that you see, these very large contributions from the CPA vertex corrections. Has there been any comparison to the other limits where, you know, like for example, the ones that were worked out that we looked at with uncorrelated disorder to see if those match or not?
This I cannot say. Okay. But you referred to these, diverging behavior. This is just the scaling that you expect. So it goes as
So that's the skew scattering then, I guess, sense. Okay.
But connection to what you were working out, I cannot comment on that. So we have either perfect systems or disordered systems dealt with in the CPA.
Right, and the other ones were crystalline alloys, so that would be the comparison, I guess.
Question?
This may be a little bit off topic, but you also do AMR calculations, and so for the AMR, the vertex correction, did you see an instance where the vertex correction would make an important qualitative contribution, change sign, and hence suppress the magnitude significantly? And second question, if I can have related to that, you guys are giving us some simple rule of thumb how to look for high anomalous spin-Hall effect materials. Do you have a simple set of rules where to look for large AMR materials?
Okay, first question first. So this is an AMR, and this is derived from the diagonal elements of the conductivity tensor. In this case, the vertex corrections are of minor importance, I would say. They can change results. So it would take a bit to dig out the slide, but I could show it later if you are interested. Results for silver, palladium, or systems like that. That the diagonal elements of the conductivity tensor are affected, typically in the order of some 5-10% in the case of transition metals. If you go to SP element systems like copper, zinc, then you can have a factor of 2. But never the change, the sign never changes. It correlates the impact with the mean free path lengths, I would say. The longer, the more important. And for transition metals, it's for the diagonal elements, it's minor importance. for the off-diagonal elements, of course, it's really very important. And this also then would give a hint for the rules, very similar, I think, to what Ingrid was saying. So if you bring elements together that are very different concerning the atomic number, then you can expect huge impacts for the skew scattering contribution. But of course, as we heard, one has to be careful. If you look for the Hall angle, this might look differently. Whether you look then if you look at the Hall conductivity itself. But in doubt, I also would give the recipe or recommendation, take elements very different in atomic number. And this also allows us to determine the sign. So if so to say, if the difference is plus, you get a certain sign. If the difference is this way, you get another sign.
I think it was one of the slides, one before the final one that you showed, where you showed the contribution from the thermal and the electrical part of the the Hall conductivity, was it?
That is said.
This one, yeah.
Yeah. So these two contributions are important, so to say, if you look for the isolated condition.
So how do you
have no electric current flowing.
How do you understand the left one where the two contributions have opposite signs? They have different origin of the scattering mechanism?
Again, this is connected with a different behavior of the, of the spin Hall conductivity and the spin Nernst conductivity. So these two are not necessarily connected concerning their sign.
Why would that be?
Well, because these are primarily determined at the, immediately at the Fermi energy, while here you have to collect the information around the Fermi energy.
Okay.
So you can have isosign. Okay.
Thank you.
I think also your theory is basically zero temperature, right?
Oh, thanks for the question. Yes and no. So first of all, the formalism as such, I was stressing here only the application of the Kubo-Streda type. So restriction to T equals zero. But we can, of course, incorporate also temperature effects. And Ingrid was talking about temperature, but she had in mind the electronic system. What is, I guess, more important for most situations is temperature of the lattice, including lattice vibrations. And what we did here is we include here this thermal displacements around the equilibrium positions as a function of the temperature, where we make, so to say, a distribution of the atoms according to given temperature and system, of course. And again, we do a CPA averaging over these systems. And now, with this, we can deal even copper as if it would be an alloy. And so we call this alloy analogy model. And in fact, this is very similar to what Paul Kelly is doing with his people. The only difference is he is averaging over a discrete supercell while we are doing the CPA averaging. And now you see here the resistivity of copper as a function of the temperature over 500 Kelvin, and this is very close to the experimental result.
But if you also look to thermoelectric effects, you will also have something like phonon drift contribution.
Yes,
right?
This is
that will be a little bit more
not
difficult,
taken into account yet. So the other, so to say, thermal impact via the electronic temperature and going away from Mott's formula, this is taken into account.
Thank you.
So are there any additional questions? And if it's not the case, let's thank you, Hubert, once more. I have a small announcement to make. As you know, the next part of our program is a poster session. And before poster session, we have a small poster talks in which during 2 minutes you can advertise your work. So in coffee break, please put all your posters and be prepared to give 2 minutes short talk, emphasize what is interesting in your poster. And these talks would be given in alphabetical order, so please try to figure out in which part of these 20 talks your name should be, so that we don't spend a lot of time waiting for the next speaker. Thank you. So afternoon session is closed, and we thank once more our speakers.